Messiah. All right. I have to try to get through this before I get killed. Where help me leave off, Randy? Yeah, it is your job to remember. Okay, so we did that. By the way, this is part 3 in a 3-part series. If you have not listened to Stating the Obvious 226 and 227, go back and do it. I don't have time for your shit right now. I'm so caring about the list. I don't have time for your shit right now. Hey, thanks for listening to my podcast. I don't have time for your shit right now. You kids, get off my lawn! I'm an asshole sometimes. None of you needed to be told that if you're regular listeners. Okay, I did that. We're up to page 82. Third full paragraph. Greetings. I'm the Great One himself, Cynical Libertarian Society, CYNLIBSOC.com on the internet, CYNLIBSOC on the Twitterverse. I'm the founder of Cynical Libertarian Society. Have I mentioned the 10 years of podcasting? I've been doing this for 10 years. For 10 years, I have been recording Stating the Obvious podcast, the weapons platform from which I launched the cruise missile of my intellect that homes in on to destroy stupid motherfuckers all over the world, especially if you're a fucking statist. And if you think that capitalism is somehow to blame for the government taking money away from taxpayers and giving it to corporations, if you think that, you should be mowed down with a 50 caliber machine gun, because that has nothing to do with capitalism or the market. Okay, I'm going to try not to repeat myself as much, because I'm just saying the same shit over and over again. Let's get back to reading. Here we go. Page 82, third full paragraph. Last year, Senator Tom Coburn, a conservative from Oklahoma, proposed legislation that would bar any sports league with profits exceeding $10 million annually from claiming tax-exempt status. Coburn has noted that NFL officials not only duck federal taxes but use their exempt status to avoid city and state taxes when they travel on league business to the Super Bowl, for instance. Oh, and one other key expenditure, lobbying. The NFL pays $2 million per year for that. Coburn's proposal has never been debated, let alone voted upon. Well, but wait. Isn't Obama the president? And aren't there Democrats in the Senate who care about poor people so much? So why isn't this being discussed? Oh, gee, never mind. I bet it must have something to do with capitalism. The government couldn't possibly have anything to do with why this legislation to take away the NFL's tax exemption isn't being talked about in the House of the Senate of the United States government. No, the government can't have anything to do with that. It's obviously because of capitalism. All right, repeating myself already. Page 84, first full paragraph. Where do you think these additional monies are going to come from? So we're talking about how the NFL is going to get a bunch of money, blah, blah, blah. They are going to come from you and me in the form of more public subsidies and more stadiums and higher prices for tickets, parking, and all the rest. Again, not capitalism. Yeah, the higher taxes, that's not capitalism. Higher taxes is not market. Higher taxes is statism. Higher taxes is the government. Higher taxes is democracy. You voted for this. Shut the fuck up. All right, page 87. Oh, this is fucking... I want to read this. All right, here we go. I once made the mistake of watching a football game with an Italian woman who is studying medieval gender roles. What are you going to college for? Oh, I'm studying medieval gender roles. Okay, so this woman's going to be a fucking parasite for her entire life. She's never going to get an actual job. And with whom, rather unimaginatively, I hoped to have sex. So these are the kind of women he's selecting for his sex partners, as women who study medieval gender roles. I can guarantee you she's a feminist, and no, she's not going to have sex with you. All right. It was a sort of mistake one makes in one's 20s before one has developed a proper appreciation for the virtues of compartmentalization. Quote, they are spending most times hugging, Elena observed. Those are blocks, I said. And then at the end, they make a big pile on the ground and grind each other. There's no grinding. Then they spank each other's on the behind. It's a gay ritual. I don't think so, I said. Now, who is it who said that football is gay guys touching each other on the butts while wearing tight pants? Oh, it was me! Me and the feminist gender role study woman from Italy can both see through the bullshit. The rest of you are swear up and down. These are manly men. Men, 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 men. All right, anyway, back to reading. But look, before each time, the skinny one, the sex leader, the quarterback, he makes all the big boys bend over. Then he chooses his favorite and comes up behind the lucky one and makes a pantomime of sodomy. No, I said, no, no, no. That's the snap. It's how the play starts. And the quarterback gets the ball from one guy, the center. It's not a choice. He can't just come up to, like, the tight end. Elena looked at me for several contemplated European seconds. The what?
It's the tight end. Oh, but there's nothing about football that's gay.
All right, anyway, now all the homosexuals hate me, but I'm used to that. It's fine. Just saying, the gender studies, the medieval gender studies feminist sees what I see. So there you go. All right, that was classic. All right, here we go. Page 89. Okay. The logic seems to be that football is a domain of hypermasculinity. Touching the asses of other men wearing tight pants is not hypermasculinity. Again, we're a little confused here. The logic seems to be that football is a domain of hypermasculinity, a physical and psychological space where alpha males do battle, and gay men can't be alphas because they are fragile and frightened and weak, which is to say feminine. And everyone knows, and curiously consents to the fact, that the assigned roles of the feminine in football remain safely locked in pre-suffrage era. See, now we have to make this about feminism and the feminist agenda and gender oppression and the victimhood of women and all this other stuff. Because, of course, the part where you vote for politicians who take taxes from people and give it to the corporations isn't enough. Now you have to victimize women because we can't do anything here in the realm of statism without victims. The two archetypes seen most commonly on television are cheerleaders and players' wives. Got that, ladies? You can either dance around on the sideline as a half-naked sex object or sit in the stands cheering on your man. Let me remind you, the cheerleaders voluntarily take those jobs. Let me remind you that these women voluntarily married the football players. Nobody came to these women, for example, the way the government comes to people and says, you will give us taxes or we will kill you. The government at no point came to these women and said, you must marry this football player or you must be a cheerleader. Again, they did that voluntarily. But again, Steve Almond, because he has a tiny penis, does not understand the concept of voluntarily choosing to do something like choosing to be a cheerleader, choosing to marry a football player, or choosing to be a football player. It remains unclear to me why so many women watch football, given how dismissive the game is of them. I can answer that. I can tell you why women watch football. Number one, they think there's two reasons. That's a joke for those of you who did not listen to the previous episodes. There's two reasons. The first reason, women watch football because they think that being all into sports is going to make men think they are attractive, because women are very confused about what makes them attractive. Women think women think the things in men that make men attractive to them are the things that women should have to make men attracted. That's why, right, women are attracted to men who are powerful. Women are attracted to men who are rich. Women are attracted to men who watch and play sports. So women think, oh, if I'm rich and powerful and watch and play sports, men will be attracted to me, because women have no clue what men are actually attracted to, which is essentially titties. But what men are attracted to is another topic. And we want to get through this so that Randy doesn't have to be attracted to beating my ass if this goes into a four-parter. Second reason women watch football is because, just like men, they have no sense of identity. Because most of them are dumb, like most men. Most of them are statist, like most men. Most of them are intellectually inferior, like most men. So when you see somebody who's a rabid sports fan, whether it's a man or a woman, it's somebody sitting going, wow, man, my life is so fucking empty that I'm going to devote all of this mental and emotional energy and all this time of my life to watching 11 guys wearing tight pants touching each other's butts. You know, what you choose to do with the time you have to live on the planet Earth says something about you. Again, myself as the example. What do I choose to do with the time I have to live on the planet Earth? Well, I do this podcast. That says something about me. I ride my bicycle. That says something about me. I read books. That says something about me. I go trail running. That says something about me. Right? What you choose to do with your time says something about you. These people choose to spend a large amount of their time. Believe me, for some of you, it's large. Not just their time as in watching the games, but again, what is money? Money is time. So when you shell out $30 for a Broncos t-shirt, let's say you have a job making $10 an hour before taxes. So that's like $8 an hour or whatever after taxes. So when you spend $30 on a Bronco t-shirt, you're trading 4 hours of your life that you worked at some shitty job that you hate. You're trading that 4 hours of your life for a Broncos t-shirt. That's why, one reason why, I don't have sports t-shirts, because I'm not going to trade part of my life for that. Whenever I spend money, I recognize I'm trading part of my life for that. That's how I think of this in terms, like, if I'm going to order a pizza, I sit there and go, well, what did I do today? Did I, you know, which job did I work at? What did I make at that job? So let's say I work the job where I make $15 an hour. And let's say that I order a pizza, and a large pizza that's a good pizza, not from a shitty place that I like, is going to cost me $28, so let's just round it up to 30. It's a $30 fucking pizza. So that means today, when I worked at the job where I get paid $15 an hour, I just traded 2 hours of my life for that pizza. And so I have to ask myself, is that pizza worth 2 hours of my life? Once in a while it is. A lot of the times it isn't. So these people who are these fanatical sports fans, be they men or women, they're saying they have too much free time. All right, not really. They're saying, because that was just insulting. That was not critical thinking at all. But they're saying that to them, the investments they're making in sports is worth a chunk of their life. And in my opinion, there are things you can do with your life that make you a better person and make the world a better person, right? Again, helping a family, the house burns down, so you're helping them build a new house. You make the world a better place. You go to the gym and you exercise. You make yourself a better place. You're cooking your own food and you're cooking something healthy. You're making yourself a better person. You're going out to the trails and you're helping to rebuild the trail system because it was destroyed by erosion. You're making the world a better place. You can choose ways to spend your time doing things that make you a better person, make the world a better place, help other people. Spending excessive amounts of time And I'm not talking about watching a football game now and then. I'm talking about fanatical devotion, watching over and over and over and talking about it and buying the merch and all this stuff. This is saying that you're willing to spend a large amount of your time on something that doesn't make you a better person and doesn't help the world. And I believe you're doing this because you're compensating for your own failures. And in the case of Steve Almond, who admits throughout the book what a great football fan he is, he's compensating for his small penis because he has a penis obsession. All right, I've fucking run that into the ground. Let me get going. But I'm more interested for now in the way a figure like Sam exposes the neurotic sexual conflicts at the heart of football. Here, for instance, is how a linebacker named Jonathan Vilmer explained his concerns about having Sam as a teammate. Okay, so Sam is a football player who is homosexual. You need to know that. Quote, imagine if he's the guy next to me and, you know, I get dressed, naked, taking a shower, the whole nine, and it just so happens he looks at me. How am I supposed to respond? Unquote. Vilman's point is that, unlike employees of other lines of work, he might have to be naked in front of Sam, which could make him uncomfortable. Fair enough. But can I just ask, why is Jonathan Vilma haunted by the fantasy of his own devising in which he is standing naked next to Michael Sam and being visibly inspected by him, maybe even gasp admired? Well, let's see. What if women were forced to get naked next to men? Would that be so terrifying? I mean, I don't think so. Isn't that just a fantasy of women that... Now, let me point out that this is one of these things that I'm kind of on the fence-ish about. Again, if the guy, if you're standing here, and you're undressing next to a gay guy, and the gay guy looks at you, no, I agree, you're not going to get gay cooties, you're not going to turn gay because a gay guy looked at you, and the idea that this gay guy is going to look at you and want to have sex with you is perhaps a form of self-flattery, right? This is the whole thing that women are like, well, every time a man looks at me, he wants to have sex with me. It's the exact same thing, actually. This is men projecting onto homosexual men what women project onto heterosexual men, that every time a man sees them, he wants to have sex with her. It's like, well, no, actually, most of you women are not worthy of my cock, and you're not attractive. And the honest-to-God truth that needs to be faced is just because the man is gay, just because Sam is gay, does not mean he's going to be sexually attracted to every other man on the football team. You guys might not be his speed. He actually might not want to have sex with you, and you might want to go ahead and just come to grips with that reality. But still, back to the point where Steve Almond is saying, what's the big deal? Well, what's the big deal if men and women share a locker room, right? Why can't we get naked next to women and take a shower next to women? If we're going to say it's not good for women, then we need to say it's not good for straight guys. Because remember, it's all about equality. Feminism isn't about women being better than men. No, it's about women and men being equal. What is Vilma, a player so vicious that he was suspended for 4 games last season for attempting to injure opposing players, really afraid of here? That the simple act of a gay man looking at his naked body will call his own sexuality into question? That he'll catch gay cooties? That Sam will overpower him and force him to have gay sex? Why does Vilma imagine that he has to respond to Sam at all? Again, I would say the same for if a woman is naked and I walk in the room with her, what is she afraid of? Is she afraid she's going to catch heterosexual white man cooties? Right? Why are women so afraid of men seeing them naked? What are they scared of? Hey! Hey, Randy, we're on the second page of notes. You should be happy. hate me, I know. Oh, God. If this goes into four parts, shoot me. It might. You know what? We're going to do four parts. God, you hate me. But we're going to record part four next week. There's no way I'm going to get all this in this episode. Just deal with it. This is shit. Sorry, this is why I shouldn't have email open while I'm working. And by working, I mean having fun, because this podcast isn't work. It's a good time. Okay, seriously, we're going to do four parts, but we'll do the other next one. All right, here we go. Page 92. Here's the card. Anybody who says he hates gay people is really saying he hates the secret gay parts of himself. Now that is spoken like a true fucking left-wing statist fucking trying to psychoanalyze other people piece of shit. Again, let us substitute words. Anybody who says he hates conservative people is really saying he hates the secret conservative parts of himself. Anybody who says he hates anarchist people is really saying he hates the secret anarchist parts of himself. Right, this whole thing where if you hate, and what exactly does hate mean? Of course, this is the liberal left-wing statist version of hate, which is to say anything a left-wing statist doesn't disagree, which is to say anything a left-wing statist disagrees with. But no, if you don't hate people who are gay, that does not mean you are gay. This fucking shit. If you hate capitalism, it's because you hate the capitalist parts of yourself. I don't know, maybe that's true. Who knows? But I'm just, again, it's Mr. fucking Obsession with Penis wants everybody who's not like him to be gay. There's this obsession that the fucking left-wing statists have with everybody is gay. No, everybody's not gay. Page 97. As history attests, there are clear social and political ramifications to this internal schism. What is this schism that we're talking about? I need some context here. Oh, the schism is about manly men having sex with other men. And again, okay, so if having sex with, and he does all this thing about how Achilles had sex with other men and manly men have always had sex with other men throughout history. Okay. If manly men have sex with other men and all this is cool, I'm sorry, explain to me again why the Messiah, Hussein Obama, hasn't legalized gay marriage yet? Wait, we've got all this obsession about how football players hate homosexuals and homophobia, and if you have any problems with gay people, it's because you're gay and all this other stuff. And, oh, if everyone's just enlightened, like Steve Almond, who's a liberal Democrat. Okay, so then why haven't the liberal Democrats in the federal government legalized homosexual marriage yet? Oh, could it be that they're afraid of gays? Could it be that maybe they're secretly homosexual? I mean, we know Obama's homosexual. That's pretty much a given. God damn it. Randy, will you kill that? Thank you. So that's the schism we're talking about. The schism where manly men have sex with other men, but as history attests, there are clear social and political ramifications to this internal schism. The reason so many societies have attacked homosexuality is not just because their leaders were sexually insecure, though they were. Oh, so the leaders were sexually insecure. You mean the leaders that were democratically elected? Are those leaders? Oh. See, again, the society is attacking homosexuals. The 99% are attacking homosexuals because their leaders are sexually insecure. If you, as a fucking sheeple, are actually doing anything, such as attacking homosexuals, because your leader has a small penis, maybe your DNA should be eliminated from the gene pool. Now, I attack homosexuals. I talk bad shit about the GLBTKKK because they want to use the state to kill me and to force me to accept them and pay for their sex change operations and give them maternity and give, you know, men maternity leave because they identify as women and all this other shit. But I'm not doing that because my leader is sexually insecure. I don't have a leader. I'm doing that because as long as you're a statist and you want to use violence against me to force me to do what you want, you are my enemy. When homosexuals stop utilizing violence and aggression and the state in order to attempt to force me to do what they want me to do, then I'll stop attacking them. And the homosexuals out there who aren't using the state to force me to do things, I'm not attacking them. I have a problem with them because they're not statist. It's also because the most effective leaders exploited the homoerotic anxieties of their male population. They defined masculinity as a willingness to do violence without remorse and offered men the chance to atone for their aberrant urges by persecuting homosexuals. This impulse might have found its earliest expression in religious allegories such as Sodom and Gomorrah, but it's not some wild coincidence that fascist cultures and repressive regimes exhibit the same genocidal mania. Okay, so is the United States a fascist culture or a repressive regime? I would agree that it's both, but then again, a piece of shit like Steve Almond with his small penis and his penis issues would say, no, it's a democracy. Oh, it's so wonderful. We elected Obama. He's so cute. Oh, he talks so pretty. He's black. Oh my God, I bet his wiener is so big. Masculinity as a willingness to do violence without remorse. Can you say war on drugs? Can you say police officers shooting people? Can you say police officers throwing flashbangs into babies' cribs? Can you say police officers shooting unarmed civilians? Can you say police officers shooting children? Police officers shooting dogs? Can you say using drones to kill unarmed civilians in foreign countries while they're going to a wedding? But you see, all that's okay because Obama's the president and he was democratically elected by these same homophobic people. Democracy. Oh, it's wonderful. Democracy. I love democracy. Fucking excuses everything. Page 99. Oh, God, this is a long one. Jesus Christ, really? I'm going to read that much? Okay, I am, because it's feminism. Brace yourselves. Now it's me taking a nice big swig of water. All right, here we go. Yeah, any... As we go through this, just keep in mind femistatism, everybody is a victim. Yeah, femistatism, everyone's a victim. Here we go. If, at its worst, the cult of football preys on male insecurity, let's remember that Steve Almond is, by his own admission, a huge football fan. So if football is preying and fed by male insecurity and male fear of homosexuals, well, what does that tell us about Steve, who tells us he's watched the highlights of this one football game over 20 times? I would call that some fucking homoerotic repression. I mean, if there's any homoerotic suppression, okay, you're not a homoerotic suppression of your own homosexuality, I would say you can find that in watching the highlights of a football game 20 times. I'd say that's pretty fucking definitive suppression of your own homosexual urges. But again, Steve Almond apparently lacks self-awareness because he also doesn't know he has a penis issue. Okay, here we go. If, at its worst, the culture of football preys on male insecurity, prizes physical dominance, and degenerates women, it follows that these tendencies would affect not just how players interact with each other, but with women. And I would be remiss, therefore, in failing to mention the pattern of sexual violence against women perpetrated by football players. Now, in order to support his thesis of the pattern of sexual violence against women perpetrated by football players, he produces zero statistics, zero information other than one anecdotal story, which is what the next three fucking pages are. Just throwing that out. Again, when you have actual evidence, you present evidence. If all you have is one anecdote, you at least have the fucking intelligence to say, hey, you know, I have a thesis that this is what's going on, and here's the one anecdote I have to support it. Here's the thing, though. To this point, I've avoided citing criminal complaints. It feels unfair to me to smear the many for the actions of the few. Oh, you mean like with feminism, where all men are considered rapists just because some men have raped women? Where all men are accused of patriarchy because some men have patted women on the ass and told them to get back in the kitchen? Oh, that's interesting. Yes, we wouldn't want to smear the many for the actions of the few. Why, no. That would be so uncool, man. Dude, we can't do that. Unless, of course, the smear campaign is directed against heterosexual white men who work for a living. In which case, yeah, we can bend them over and fuck them up the ass, which is what we'd like to do because we're all repressing our homosexual urges, aren't you, Steve? Okay, here we go. Also, the rate of allegation against players appears to be exaggerated because of their celebrity. Okay, and that's why you get actual information. You look for actual statistics of some type. But, oh, that would be math, and math is patriarchy, isn't it? The reason I'm making an exception when it comes to sexual misconduct against women is because I'm a femistatist. No, I'm sorry. Is because of a disturbing pattern that goes far beyond the behavior of individual players. The gross negligence of law enforcement and the public. So first of all, again, there is a pattern here. There's a pattern that goes far beyond, and he has one story to support his thesis because of this disturbing pattern. Second of all, it's being neglected by law enforcement and the public. Oh, wait, who was it that did a series of podcasts about Jerry Sandusky and how the university and the public and the police and everybody else looked the other way while he was butt-fucking 10-year-old boys in the shower? Oh, I think I talked about that. Once again, if the police are looking the other way, well, hey, the police are part of the state. The police are run by the government. The government is run by politicians. The politicians are elected by the people. If the people want to look the other way, that's democracy. That's not the market. It's not capitalism. That's called democracy. And since none of these people, again, the difference between, okay, this is important. Just leaving this for, this is important. Important enough for me to get a drink of water. This is important. A while back in a podcast, I talked about the flaw with the market. Because as an anarcho-capitalist, I'm going to repeat what I said then. As anarcho-capitalist, we make this argument that the market will solve problems. Right? Who's going to build the roads? Well, okay, the market will fucking figure out who's going to build roads. Because the market represents the desires of the people, and it represents where the people are willing to put their money. So if the people want roads, then there's the market's going to find a way to provide people with roads. And this is the same argument that the femistatist Ben Stone, who is masquerading as an anarcho-capitalist, makes about freedom. He says that when the market wants freedom, we will have freedom. Now, I'm pointing out the problem with this. The problem with this is that the market does, in fact, represent the wishes of the people. And if the people are all idiots, the market is going to give you bad results, at least initially. Now, this is important. Democracy is where the people get what the people want through voting, through the state, yada, yada, yada. The market is where the people get what the people want based on where they spend their money, what they spend their time doing, what they support. Those two things sound very similar. And I would agree, they are very similar, and that's why what I'm saying right now is critical. In fact, I need to do an anarchy moment just about this right here. I believe, again, this is one of these things I've come across. I think this is fucking critical to understanding anarcho-capitalism and to moving through the world. So, when I say the market will provide what the people want, how is that different from saying democracy provides people with what they want? They sound exactly the same. They are exactly the same up to that point. I agree. Right? So if I make the argument that, I'm trying to construct something intelligent here. Yeah, I know. The NFL in a market situation would have to sell enough tickets to build the stadium. So if the people bought enough tickets to build the stadium, that would say the people want the stadium. And I know I'm simplifying it a little bit there, you know, the concession, but just go with me, right? So if the people buy enough tickets, and the NFL owner could have a fundraiser, they could have a bake sale, they could do whatever, right? If in the market, enough people put in enough money for the NFL owner to build a stadium, that would mean the market is reflecting what the people want. Now, democracy. If the people vote for the politician who then raises the taxes, who then gives the tax money to the NFL owner to build the stadium, that is doing what the people want. Those two situations are exactly the same. There's a mechanism. In one, the mechanism is democracy and the state. In the other, the mechanism is capitalism and the market. In both instances, there's a mechanism which is reflecting the will of the people and implementing what the people want to have happen. Now, if that is true, if what I just said is true, if they are the same process, just different mechanisms, how can I intellectually sit here and differentiate to you and say that capitalism and the market are quote-unquote good, we're going to use nebulous terms here, and that government and the state, taxation, how can I call those bad? In order for me to differentiate one is good, one is bad, I have to have some kind of criteria. There has to be a differentiation between those two. So far, there is no differentiation. All right, there's little. Some of you will say, well, no, but in the statist thing, in the statist scenario, the politicians are elected by one group of people, but the taxes are imposed on everyone. Okay, and yes, I'll give you that. But for the purposes here, let's just ignore that for the moment, because there's something bigger at issue. And you've heard this before. When I get around to it, you're going to say, Jesus Christ, not this again. But Jesus can't help you, because Jesus is attached to a stick. He can't even help himself. He's the son of God, but he can't stop some people from nailing him to a fucking stick. Yeah, some son of God you are. All right. I'm composing my thoughts. The difference between capitalism and market, statism, government, taxation, is this: the feedback mechanism. In statism, there is no feedback mechanism. The election of the politicians, who then raise the taxes, and they give the money to the NFL team owner to build a stadium. There's no feedback that comes back to the politicians or to the taxpayers if things go bad, because of the subsidies, the legal protections, all of this other stuff. Let's say that the NFL team goes bust, it's a failure, the stadium ends up being unused. All you'll get is you'll get excuses. The taxpayers will continue to live in the delusion that they did the right thing. All of this other shit. There's no feedback mechanism in democracy that holds anyone accountable for what they've done. Right? Obama, murdering people in foreign countries with flying robots. Is he accountable for that? Well, no, of course not. Are the people who voted for him held accountable for the fact that he's killing other human beings? Well, no, of course not. There is no accountability feedback mechanism because the state insulates the participants from the consequences of their actions. Now, in the market, in the capitalist system, that feedback loop does exist. Maybe they loan the NFL team owner money to build the stadium. Well, if he defaults on that, there are ways they can go about, they can claim the stadium. They can say, okay, you owe it. The stadium belongs to us now. If the NFL team owner takes all the money he got for the stadium and spends it on cocaine and hookers, in a capitalist market situation, there's no legal loopholes for him to hide behind. There are no corporations, which are these imaginary things written on paper that protect the people in the company from the legal ramifications, right? You can't sue the CEO because the CEO didn't do it. The corporation did it. And the corporation is this legal barrier that protects the people who work for the corporation and own the corporation from the consequences of what they do. In a free market capitalist situation, that doesn't exist. So the people could say, hey, we'll donate this money to you, we'll give you this money, we'll buy your tickets, whatever, and you'll build a stadium, but you have to agree that you're going to keep your sports team here for the next 20 years. And if he decides to take his sports team somewhere else, he's broken the contract with them. There's no corporation for him to hide behind. There's no government to protect him. And again, he has to actually offer up enough value for people to give him. If this is a, whatever, $200 million stadium, it's not like with the political system where $200 million, you just raise some taxes, you fucking print some more money, you throw that shit out. Who gives a fuck? In a free market system, he wants $200 million to build a stadium? Well, he's goddamn actually got to find a way to create $200 million worth of value for the people in that city in order to get that $200 million before he's even built the stadium. So this forces, again, this is a feedback mechanism. This forces one of two things to happen. Either he's got to find a way to create $200 million worth of value. I don't know what that would be. Or, God damn it, I just had a brain cramp. I seriously just forgot what my second point was going to be. Oh, God. I love when that happens. I love doing this show without notes. If he wants $200 million, he's got to create $200 million worth of value for these people before he builds a stadium. Or he's got to, I now remembered my second point. Or he's got to scale down his vision. It's a feedback mechanism. Okay? It's like, I want $200 million to build a stadium. Well, you're not going to get $200 million. To build a stadium, you're gonna have to think a little fucking smaller. You might need to build a $25 million stadium, and then in 10 years, you could save up enough money. You know, save money, I know that's patriarchy too. You could save up enough money to build your $200 million stadium, or you could raise enough money over time. You see, there's a feedback mechanism that prevents things from getting too stupid. Again, with the state, with government, with democracy, with taxation, there is no feedback mechanism. Some of these fucking NFL teams show up like, well, we want $300 million to build a stadium. The government just gives them $300 million because nobody involved gives a fuck. The politicians don't give a fuck because they're going to be out of office soon. They're not going to run for re-election. They'll either get re-elected or they don't get re-elected. They still have a shit ton of money. They're rich. The bureaucracy, the employees in the bureaucracy, they're not going anywhere. They're not going to face any ramifications. The voters are just stupid. They're going to pay their taxes no matter what. I mean, they don't give a shit. And the NFL team owners win. They get $300 million for basically just showing up and throwing around some threats. There's no consequences for anyone. And there's no feedback. In a market capitalist situation, there are consequences. And there is feedback. If you can't raise $300 million, you got to scale your dreams down, brother. You're not getting a $300 million stadium. And if you get your stadium, and if there were strings at that, you know, if it's just a straight up donation, you say, hey, just give me money, I'll build a stadium, whatever. But if you say to the people, look, I'm doing this pledge drive, whatever, I'm selling this merchandise. If we get enough money, I build a stadium, and, you know, then they can say, the people as a whole can say, yeah, well, you know, this kind of sucks. So then the NFL team owner may have to come back and say, okay, look, if you guys give me the money, then this is what I'll do. I'll keep the team here for 10 years. And it's a sort of, it's a form of collective bargaining. Man, you would think the left-wing statists would be in love with that. But they're not. Because they're statist. They don't want a feedback mechanism involved in any of this. So while sitting here and saying, well, democracy, it's what the people want, and saying the market, it's what the people want, they look a lot alike. And I think this is an important distinction, not just for us to understand, but when we're talking about this, to stupid fucking statist, to point out to them, democracy, contrary to what, again, Obama, the government at any point, when has any politician ever been held personally accountable for jack shit? Even with the bureaucracy, I mean, police, how often do police officers actually be? Yeah, it's been a long day for me too. How often do you see police officers actually being held accountable for killing innocent people, for maiming innocent people, for killing and maiming children, for, you know, beating people, for doing nothing, for killing dogs? How often do you see police officers go to prison for things that, if you or I did it, we'd be in jail for the rest of our life? The state removes all semblance of responsibility, accountability, feedback loops. The market keeps those in place. That's one of the things that differentiates capitalism from the fascism and from the crony capitalism. capitalism. Again, the example I always use, Enron. Everybody's like, Enron, see how terrible capitalism is? No. Enron was capitalism at its finest. The company did stupid shit. They didn't have money they claimed they had. They did all kinds of dumbass shit. And this was an example where the government did not show up and bail them out like it did the banking corporations and the automobile corporations. And Enron no longer exists. That was not a bad thing. And this is what's so frustrating. Anytime you have to actually communicate, if you, God forbid, you actually have to talk to a statist, but if you're talking to a statist, they don't get this. The statist sees successful capitalism. The statist sees idiots going out of business, and the statist says, well, look, capitalism is a failure. No. That's called a success. Because that right there, this is where we bring it around, what you've all heard before, that right there is called, say it with me, my friends, natural selection, otherwise known as evolution. Yes, in the market, in the capitalism, there is natural selection. Those who do what they say they're going to do thrive. Those that are capable thrive. The NFL team owner who can raise the money to build a stadium and then provide enough value that people will keep coming there and paying him, that NFL owner, that football team owner, would thrive. The football team owner who can't create value for the people around him is not going to thrive. He's going to go out of business. With the NFL as it is today, that doesn't happen because there is no natural selection. The state has completely circumvented natural selection. With all the subsidies it gives the NFL, with the legal protection it gives the NFL, with the tax loopholes and the nonprofit status it gives the NFL, it allows the NFL is not a capitalist organization, it's not a market organization. It is isolated and insulated from natural selection by the state. That's not a matter of opinion. It's a fucking fact. Do you fucking deny the NFL gets taxpayer subsidies? Do you deny it gets tax breaks? Are you denying that the NFL is a nonprofit organization? No, these things are facts. These are not opinions. The NFL is where it is at because it is not facing natural selection. It is not on the market. It is not involved in capitalism. It is a statist function of the state, which is there to keep you, sports fans, stupid and mind numbed. All right, we're going to be back in part 4 of 3.